Yeah, it was a tough close to the week for the grain markets, but some short covering helped to support livestock futures. We're heading into another high anxiety weekend for the livestock trade, and it appears many traders just decided that out is the best position to hold while these markets are closed for a couple of days.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll chat with Brian Doherty from Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. And in the final segment, I will update you the Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, along with the Sparkle City studio audience, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie.
Yes. Hey, everyone. Hi. Woo. Hi. Hey, yeah, it's good to see everybody.
They're very excited. Very
they
excited.
They are. They are. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, there is
no good-looking group.
Good-looking group, and there is no mask that can contain that level of excitement. You know what I mean?
That's right. That's keep right. The, they got to show that smile off.
Woo! It's very, very big deal.
Oh, man. Monmouth, Illinois says that they're going to be closed now.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's even a press release. I'm working on it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. We got it. Smithfield Foods, Inc. announced today that it will proactively suspend operations. Proactively.
Wow.
Proactively suspend operations at its Monmouth, Illinois facility beginning next week and until further notice after a small portion of its 1,700 employees tested positive for COVID-19.
Until further notice.
Yep. Monmouth plant represents approximately 3% of U.S. fresh pork supplies and also produces bacon. Employees will be paid during the closure.
Okay.
Let's see. I know I can find this here real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Monmouth, don't even start the clock on me. Okay. It's farmland in Monmouth, okay. Illinois, Smithfield, 11,000 hogs per day.
Oof. Okay.
Is what they can handle. You know, you compare that to some of the biggest that I see, and this is the biggest by quite a ways. It's Smithfield in Tar Heel, North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
33,500.
Yeah.
But from there, it drops all the way down to 21,000, and that's Seaboard in Sioux City, Iowa,
mm-hmm.
which I am hearing there are some problems there as well.
Okay.
You know, this week might have just warmed us up, dude. Mm-hmm.
I wonder that, too, and that was my thought, too. Okay, well, yeah. Maybe, you know, 11,000 snouts, all right. We just keep shaving off that number. The shackle space, it just keeps going down and down.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really, really, really it's troublesome trying to figure out where we go next and how it's almost like a shell game, dude.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Move them around until we can find a place that we can process these hogs. We can only put those hogs on hold for so long, you know,
right.
By way of the rations, by way of, you know, one of the most interesting things, and I would have never given it a thought, but it makes all the sense in the world. Guys were turning up the temperature in the hog buildings 1 degree per day, watching out for their health, but moving them closer to summer conditions as quickly as they could.
Okay.
See? So, trying to slow everything down, tighten down the doors or the gates on the feeders so mm-hmm. that they got to work a little harder to get the feed. Boy, they're doing everything that they possibly can to slow stuff down. It's mm-hmm. a tough, tough situation. But I've got a feeling that we're going to be doing more updates on closures and openings and hopefully openings next
right.
week.
Yeah.
So we'll just have to stay on top of it. Dude, let's get into the news. What was moving the markets around?
Chip wheat trade this week started with a big move to the upside as traders factored in ideas of freeze damage to the U.S. winter wheat crop and speculation that Russia would restrict wheat exports in order to preserve an adequate domestic supply. The week ended with sharp losses as traders factored in some needed rains in the U.S. and in the Black Sea region. Traders were also disappointed by the lack of export demand, something many expected this week. July hard red winter wheat was a dime lower, 483 and a quarter. July soft red slumped 14 and one quarter cents, 530 and a half. July spring wheat fell 6.5 cents to 513 and one quarter, Chip.
You know, and with as volatile as the market was this week, you might be surprised to hear that July SRW wheat was down just 7 cents. Okay. July hard red winter wheat futures down just 2 cents, and spring July futures down 5.75. Not a terrible week.
Yep. Well, the week for corn started with aggressive selling as the market fell to 2016 lows on the continuation chart, with May corn matching that year's low at 301 on Tuesday's low. After touching that, the market attempted to post an upside recovery with expectations of increased corn demand from China driving the short covering. USDA this morning announced the sale of more than 589,000 metric tons of U.S. corn for delivery to Mexico. Of the tally, 370,000 tons are for delivery in the current marketing year, with nearly 220,000 metric tons for delivery in the 2020-21 marketing year. May corn futures were 3.5 cents lower today, 315 and three quarters. July off 323. December corn closed at 336 and three quarters, down 2 cents on the day, Chip.
Yeah, the corn market this week was, hey, look at my left hand. We've got the potential for some sales to China. And then it came in this morning with, look at my right hand. We've made some sales to Mexico. Yeah. Mexico is good about that. They know when they've got some value that they need to capture, and they've done it again. They stepped in and got it. May corn on the week off 6.5 cents. D's corn on the week down 6.75 cents.
May bean futures rallied nearly 40 cents from Tuesday's low to Thursday's high, and the contract was nearly unchanged on the week. The volatility was built on concerns over domestic demand for bean oil to make biodiesel, and on reports that China will look to U.S. supplies to rebuild state-owned reserves of soybeans and corn. This morning, USDA reported the sale of 136,000 metric tons of U.S. soybeans for delivery to China in the current marketing year. On the week, China booked 606,000 metric tons of old crop U.S. beans. Mexico also bought U.S. beans overnight, 39,000 metric tons of old crop and 86,000 tons of beans for delivery in 2021. May bean futures were 7 cents lower at 832 and a quarter. July fell 7 and a quarter to close at 839 and a half. Novi beans closed at 841 and a half, down 6.5 on the day, Chip.
Yeah. Crazy volatility, 40 cent range from Tuesday's low to Thursday's high. And on the week, the May bean contract was off 0.25 cents.
Live
and quarter of a cent. Novi beans off 9.5 cents.
Oh, geez. Well, live and feeder cattle futures clawed back early session losses. Live cattle were mixed and feeder cattle were slightly higher. Boxed beef prices were up another $5 in morning trade, helping to support cattle prices. June live cattle were 97.5 cents lower today, 84.97 and a half, and August cattle firmed 45 cents, 88.90. May feeders 17.5 cents higher, 117.45. And on the snout side, lean hog futures were up on short covering. There continues to be a high level of uncertainty over slaughter capacity in the country. May was $1.55 higher, 52.52 and a half, and July firmed 30 cents, 54.67 and a half. Chip.
All right, real quick on the week. June live cattle down $3.67 and a half. May feeder cattle down $1.82 and a half. And are you ready for this? If you got some crazy music, play it.
Yes.
Because May hogs were up $14.60. That's a 38.5% increase. And I don't know if it really is getting paid out there or not. Okay, when we come back, Brian Doherty from Stuart Peterson. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
All right, welcome back. Glad that you could join us today. This has been one of those days where we are scrambling and trying to keep up with everything that is happening around us once again. And honestly, Davis,
yes,
I am thankful for Brian Doherty, Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson,
totally
coming on the show, because I know with Brian, we're going to be able to touch all the markets.
Okay.
We're going to be able to do it in a very calm and measured way.
Ooh, I like that.
And I know that by the time we're done, people are going to be more informed than what they are right now. Brian, welcome back to AgriTalk. How you doing, my friend?
Well, I'm doing great, Chip. Thank you. And honored and pleasure to be here. I know it's difficult times, and you didn't put me on the spot at all. So we're
right.
Good.
Yeah. If you couldn't handle the spot, I wouldn't have put you there.
There you go.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I was just thinking about this, you know, from a big picture perspective. I think about the last 10, 11 months and the number of odd things or challenges or just things coming out of nowhere. And, we start with just the horrible spring last year and late planting and then ethanol waivers in summer and never did get the acreage numbers that we kind of thought might be out there. But beyond that, then you've coronavirus and energy price wars and negative crude oil prices and let's throw in tariffs and trade wars and then finally agreements on just so many different things that it's a lot of moving parts and tough to keep up on. And unfortunately, agriculture has really, you know, struggled and suffered with a lot of this. And I don't want to give anybody false hope, but markets go down, markets go up. We just need to get through this period.
Right. Right. Okay. I want to start with corn, Brian, and the demand destruction that we are experiencing in this ethanol trade. What do you make of it? I'm not even going to ask what a recovery looks like. What I want to ask is what will it take to get us to the point where we've got a chance at recovery?
Sure. Yeah. Sometimes myself and probably you and a lot of us that are really close to this, our nose is right on the screen, and so sometimes we have to just step back. And your question's appropriate. I don't have any easy answers right now, but I've got a lot of things that, as we look at the big picture, wheels are likely already in motion. So let's start with just low prices. Low prices historically have not diminished demand. So corn, in and of itself, for corn, is the right mechanism in low prices, and they might have to get lower, but you'll create demand there. We need to get through this corona thing. I'm stating all the obvious. We need to get people back to work driving. We need to get the demand for gasoline and ethanol up, and we need to get the world production down in those areas. And I don't know. I've never seen an environment where we had an energy war. I don't know the real purpose of that, because they're driving each other into the ground.
Right.
Those things have a tendency to sort of work themselves over time, and that's probably just what we need is time. And you look at the price of gas versus the price of ethanol, the whole world's kind of flipped upside down. We don't have profitable margins in corn yet. In theory, we're planting our second highest acreage number in a decade. So, so it's a supply situation for sure, big inventories worldwide. Probably the thing that needs to come along is some sort of policy change, and it could be short term, and I could give you my best guess what I would like that to look like, or maybe a weather market.
So what is your best guess on a policy change that you would like to see?
In Brian Doherty's world, what I would like to see, rather than necessarily payments to farmers, I'd like to see payment to farmers to produce 10% less of everything this year, and make it a 1-year deal. That may be fictional, but we need to do something to curb the supply in a market environment that has had its demand curbed. And this is a historic event this year.
Yeah. And I know you, Brian. I know you talking about supply management hurts you.
It does.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does.
I mean, that is... Talking about setting aside acres is not the Brian Daugherty that I've talked with for 20, 25 years. That it is that kind of a situation where it's got people considering some things that we normally would not consider, and it's a tough situation.
We're in extraordinary times, Chip. President of the United States stands in front of a podium and says, "We're doing something. We're paying people not to go to work. It's the first time in history that's ever been done. We're paying people to stay at home." Those type of things. I know from a long-term perspective, I'm not a fan of the supply side management, because the world's a smaller place, and what we don't produce one year, somebody else may make up for it in another year. But that would be on my wish list because of the timing of it. I don't think the world is going to quickly fill the void and produce a lot more this year. But that's it's a theory.
I hear you. It's interesting. Anything else that we need to do on corn as far as risk management right now? That bounce from 301, I mean, it looks pretty good. We were only off 6-7 cents this week.
But that's been the problem with corn. On any given week, it's a slow grind. We had a big push on May corn from basically 375 to 330 in about a 10-day window, and then some consolidation, and then it's been this grind down where we have down days. We're still in a downtrend. I like the recovery, but the 10-day moving average is acting as resistance. And one school of thought that farmers have to think about here is that for the foreseeable future, which might be the next month, 3 months, 6 months, is if we don't have a weather market, the new paradigm this year might be, rather than our range of corn prices we talked about earlier in the year, roughly 4.25 on December corn to probably sub 350 is our likely range.
Yeah.
Drop that whole range down 50 to 75 cents. So 350 to 275. And at 335, 340, we've got to recognize that there could be downside risk. Nobody likes to sell below cost of production before they plant the crop, but you don't have to do it with a forward contract. So it might be a year where you do use hedges and flexibility, or maybe more importantly, buy a put, sell a call above cost or above 350, maybe to 370, 380. But try and defend against this move to 275. I'm worried this energy glut is here for another month or two.
Right.
And we just keep losing ground because we'll have the crop in the ground, and usually you don't have market changing. Usually you don't have market changing weather in April or May. The rubber hits the road in mid June.
Yep. Okay. I want to jump over to cattle if we could. We're going to come back to the grains, but a couple of interesting questions came in. One I got by text. The other one's out on Twitter that I want to address here. Box beef hit an all-time high again today. Do you think this will be enough for the Packers to pull some out of cold storage? Which goes with this question off of Twitter. I know packing capacity is at 75% roughly, but can we move beef out of cold storage to the consumers?
We can. I think we should. We as the Packers should, and it's profitable for them. I don't know why they wouldn't. And this concern about, as we head into May, about store shelves getting somewhat tight, I almost think they have an obligation, or whoever owns it, to sell it into the marketplace. My goodness, they've gotten an economic incentive. The whole problem, of course, as you know, everybody knows, it's just we got a funnel, and the funnel got closed a little more this week, and we can't push the stuff through fast enough, and yet the demand is out there, and you create this perceived problem as well that the consumer, we saw, you know, let's use our toilet paper example, where, you know, they can't get enough of it. So that's our disruption and distortion in the marketplace right now. But that's a great question on the cold storage, because there's numbers in cold storage which would suggest that could help alleviate near-term supply, I'm going to say, disruptions.
Right. And the question on Twitter pointed to that 2% increase in beef that was in cold storage in the last cold storage report. That's a backwards looking. I gotta believe that we're pulling some of that beef. We've got heavyweight choice boxes over 280. This morning it was like 285 or something like that. Just some crazy number. No, it's like 287. we've got to start moving that product out of the storage.
Well, the ground beef moved and moved fast and hard, if you might remember that. The consumer went for volume and they went for cheap, and as people just naturally behave in a time like this. So the cuts themselves, I don't know about prime cuts that are going to flow out of cold storage, but there's no reason why we can't see some of that meat flow out. At least I would expect it to. The economic incentive is there.
Yeah. Primal Chucks, $271.66. It's just a crazy number. We're talking to Brian Doherty, Stuart Peterson, Total Farm Marketing. We'll be back with AgriTalk in a moment. It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers first thing today. Ukraine is considering capping its corn exports too. Ukraine may limit corn exports for the 2019-20 marketing year. Dry weather dwindles French wheat crop rating to its lowest point in at least 4 years. Chinese cotton production is expected to slide this year and going forward. Vietnam could surpass China to become the world's top apparel exporter this year. Ag and ethanol sector want and need a cut of the new aid package. USDA's Agriculture Marketing Service today will issue a request for food donation proposals, including food safety requirements. And finally, ADM closes two more ethanol facilities. Check out all that Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
Well, we had another lesson about not talking about prices without the report right in front of you at the end of the last segment. The heavyweight choice boxes in this morning's report, yes. $289.61. That was up $5.32 from the previous day. I did have the chuck price right at $271.66, mm-hmm. but the primal rib comes in at $380.70.
$380.70.
Yes, a big number there. The loin, $331.47.
Mm-hmm.
Some big numbers there. Heck, the select mm-hmm. heavyweight boxes, $277, dude.
Yep, it's crazy.
Just big numbers. Okay, before we get back to Brian, go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Sure thing. I'm looking at July hard red winter wheat, a dime lower, 483 and a quarter. July soft red slumped 14 and a quarter cents of its own, 530 and a half. May corn futures were 3.5 cents lower, 315 and three quarters. Dease corn closed at 336 and three quarters, down 2 cents today. May soybean futures were 7 cents lower, 832 and a quarter. November bean futures closed at 841 and a half, down 6.5 cents. On the livestock side, June live cattle 97.5 cents lower, 84.97 and a half. May feeders 17.5 cents higher, 117.45. And July hogs firmed 30 cents to 54.67 and a half. That is your quick market recap. Back to you.
All right, let's bring Brian Doherty, Stuart Peterson, Total Farm Marketing, back in here. Brian, those numbers that we just were talking about there in the box beef trade. Mm-hmm. Combine that with a $90 bid in the cash market, and these I understand why it's driving guys crazy out there, but those packer margins are going through the roof, and I've never seen such a divergence between the beef market and the cattle market. We've got incredible demand for beef at the retail level. We've got a cattle situation where demand is backed off because we don't know how we're going to get them processed. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen in cattle trade.
Well, it is from a cattle trade perspective. It's record, and yet I think what this is reflective of is just how over time the marketplaces created an environment of more and more just-in-time inventories. So that's what happens when you have just-in-time inventories and not large reserves and freezers full of meat, so that when things get out of whack, there's a natural flow of supply into the pipeline. And that's part of this whole, you know, experience in a lot of environments, not, you know, consumer environments. This whole just-in-time inventory, it might get that might get another look from economists.
Yep, I hear you. I hear you. In the hog situation, it just comes down to we need to make the best of a bad situation in the slaughter industry and the hogs, and just make sure that we're killing as many as we can every day, right?
We have to.
Yeah.
We talked about this actually about 6 months ago, that the way cheap corn, which we get these sell-offs in corn, and they're fast each year, each of the last 6 years. We rally up some, and then we take off. In fact, the average drop from the either it would be like the May, June, or July high, but the average drop in corn was $1.16 on December futures over the previous 6 years, so 19 to 13 in that window. And when you look at the drop-off, it's 72 days. So the point is, you've got consistently cheap feed products available, and hog producers expanded to the point where we were worrying 6 months ago already that by the fall, this fall, we might run out of space. And now you have this issue. So you just have to try and market them as quickly as you can, I guess. I don't know any fast way around that. Certainly, euthanizing doesn't seem like a very good alternative.
Yeah, it sounds like some of that is going on. And when you get a memo out of the House Ag Committee asking that there be a standardized method in which to depopulate some of these farms, that one shook me when I saw that one,
yep.
Brian. It's it's a bad situation out there. They're just and. Yeah, you know, I don't want to beat that horse to a death, but did I just say that? Beat that horse
yep,
to death
you did.
There.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well,
but there we go.
It's a supply displacement, and you know, this pandemic, I don't say it just happens. I think there've been plenty of doomsayers who've talked about this, and there's people knowledgeable on it, but the spread of this virus was either so quick or was already spreading before we really knew what was out there. And you just get stuck with this. So it should, in theory, make us all pause and think, as people, how do we, you know, you're talking about, you know, supply displacement elsewhere and people hungry and starving, and yet you've got all kinds of inventory in the feedlot and in the yard.
Tough
situation.
Exactly. It is. Okay, let's talk about something a little more positive, and we're, you know, what I'm thinking about here is some potential demand coming in from China to refill their state-owned reserves. Are they going to do this? Is it enough to move the balance sheets in a positive way?
Eventually, not necessarily right away. Here's where the bearish analysts will come in and say, "Hey, Chip, you know what? There was talk of 20 million metric tons of corn this week, and that got the market excited." The bear will come in and say, yes, but the but is that ethanol demand will probably be reduced by a billion bushels of corn. So you still don't end up with any net gain out of this. So that gets back to the point that if you're kind of a pro, let's get things rolling, get things open, let's get some demand out here. I can understand that argument because we need that demand to roll forward, and hopefully these low prices in energy really spur some very significant rapid production shortfalls or reductions. But yeah, that's good, you know. And the China buying, Mexico buying, we have trade agreements. There's a lot of positives underneath all of this. I've been focusing, and I think you have too, just on all the negative sort of near-term stuff, and it's always concerning when you're right in the heat of it.
Yep, that's exactly right. You know, they're talking about 20 million ton of corn and 10 million tons of beans, but that 10 million tons of beans, doesn't that have a bigger impact on the balance sheet than that than the 20 million tons of corn could.
Well, 10 million tons of beans is roughly about 350 million. If you get a carry out at 400 and let's just say 50 million, it does. If you want to use just that math, the thing with the corn market, that's such a big ship, and we've got to get that demand market moving. Helpful to corn might be a little bit of weather disruption out of the southern hemisphere, and we just don't see much of that on tap right now. So Brazil and Argentina combined will compete aggressively, and with the Brazilian real into a new low this week, we continue to concern ourselves with that. But on the big picture, and I know people hear this and they're tired of it, but low prices do cure low prices. Things could look a lot different in 6 months or a year from now. And for the grain producer, if he's got storage capacity, that might be your big alternative this year. Your big approach might be, I'm just going to farm it, I'm going to grow it, I'm going to store it, and let these other things straighten themselves out.
Right, right. Crazy stuff, dude. Absolutely crazy. So if you are sitting and talking with a corn and soybean producer right now and they're wondering, what the heck do I do with 2020 crop, what do you tell them?
Yeah, two schools of thought there. Just to carry over from my last thought, one is, look, go out and plant your crop. Do what you do best. Grow it. Let Mother Nature take its course and time take its course. And once you start seeing the fruits of your labor, then worry about marketing then. The more perhaps aggressive approach is to look at this and say, hey, there's risk in this marketplace. We're in something we haven't been in before, and the numbers don't really tell us we're going to stay at these prices here. If we have a big corn crop, there's a lot of people out there thinking you're going to see somewhere between 250 and 275 on December corn futures. I don't know if I'm that negative, but that's 30 to 50, 60, 70 cents down yet.
Yep.
That's worth defending. So what I would probably do is encourage producers to take a nice afternoon off and spend some time just relearning their marketing tools and sharpening that pencil and see if it's something that would fit you now. Because both strategies are certainly understandable this year. I happen to be a little more fighter than not, so I'm going to go with the trend right now and then be prepared to move out of that quickly.
Brian, what do you say to a guy that says, yeah, but I got my PLC protecting me now?
Well, you do. And some have high levels of insurance that could kick in pretty quick. So if you have those things, maybe you need or can have the luxury of being less aggressive. If you don't have those tools to your disposal, or your insurance is a level that doesn't kick in for another 40 cents if you have an average crop, it might be worth taking the time to just have discussions with the right people that can help you, or you're pushing a pencil to it, or probably both. But ask good questions and make sure that the person that's talking to you is talking to a level that you understand and that makes sense for your operation. And if it does, well, then run with it. If it doesn't, step back and go to plan B.
Excellent. Stay safe, Brian. Appreciate your time today, man.
Always a pleasure, and good luck to everyone. Stay safe as well, and have a great spring.
Excellent. That's Brian Doherty, Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. When we come back, Davis will have the Friday Farm Fuel and Fertilizer Report.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
All right, little lover boy for you there, Davis.
Gotta love a little lover boy.
I'll bet you didn't know that I knew that was a little bit of lover boy coming at you there working for the weekend.
That sounded weird. I'm going to retract that statement. It just, something not right about that.
Welcome back. I'm Chip. That's Davis. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is the final segment of the week on AgriTalk. And you know what that means.
It What's that?
Is time
Yes.
for the Friday Farm Fuel and Fertilizer Report.
Give me fire, give me that which I desire. Ooh, yeah.
The Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report is a service of Pro Farmers Inputs Monitor for weekly updated fuels and fertilizer prices from across the Midwest and in your crop district. Visit profarmer.com. And now, Chip,
kaboom!
the Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report. I titled my fertilizer report this week something to the effect of fertilizer prices mild. Fertilizer features mild price action. The key word there, of course, aside from fertilizer itself, is mild. Yeah. We've seen a couple of weeks here, and I'm just slightly perplexed, and maybe not. You know, we talked about phosphates overpriced. Oh, they're due for a correction. Well, we saw that correction, and now they're just kind of hanging out at these pretty acceptable levels. Same deal with anhydrous ammonia. Been kind of bebopping around 510 here for, gosh, going on a month now. Before that, bebopped around 500. So here's what I thought that I would do. Something I don't know if we've talked about, the spreads that I've concocted part of the inputs monitor. Yeah, it's been a while. And there are two of them, really, that on the fertilizer side that I watch. The first is our comparison between 1 acre's worth of expected new crop corn revenue compared with the weekly retail anhydrous bid. And I understand, okay? Every operation based on your APH and everything else, okay? Your expected new crop revenue is going to be different, okay?
Yep.
But we're working with averages here, a trend line yield and all this sort of stuff. Averages. But it does give us an excellent way to compare, you know, what you can get for corn, what you got to pay for anhydrous. It's just a little bit stupid that way, as far as I'm concerned. I wish I was smart enough to really do a good one. But we've been at this for a good, you know, 6 years watching this spread. And it has told us a great deal about profitability,
right,
about affordability, and about all that. Okay, so I want to go back to the first of the year. And at the first of the year, anhydrous ammonia was at a $156.81 discount to new crop revenue. In other words, our retail price for anhydrous ammonia per short ton was $156.81 below what new crop revenue was at that point.
Yep.
Do you know what that number was right then? What were the D's futures at the first of the year? Do you care to guess?
No.
Guess again, please.
It was...
Sorry, time expires. Okay. $4 even the first week of the year. Since then, the spread has narrowed at 68.7%. Still with new crop revenue at a premium to a ton of anhydrous, but we're now at $48.98 as opposed to $156.81 the first week of the year. Is that making sense?
Yes.
That the spread has narrowed,
right,
68.7%. Now, we also run new crop revenue against our nutrient composite index, which includes all the fertilizers who are factored so that they're all on a one-to-one basis. That figure started the year with our composite index at 116.30, discounted to new crop revenue. So 116.30 below an acre of new crop revenue. This week, that figure has narrowed, get this, 82% since the first of the year to 21.06. Okay. Both anhydrous and our overall composite are still at a discount to new crop revenue. That's the translation here. That's the setup that we want to see. But that discount is being whittled away very quickly. This week, the anhydrous spread narrowed like 12.3-something points after having narrowed 26 points a week before and 17 points before the week before that. Same with the composite. Narrows about 20 points a week here just in the last couple of weeks. And what we've got to watch here, yes, of course, fertilizer is cheaper this year. Of course it is. Corn's taking a nosedive.
Yeah.
So you can't just look at that here. Let's go back exactly 1 year. And this one is interesting, too. This is the more the April setup that we usually look for. This week in April of 2020, anhydrous at 510, nutrient composite at, we'll call it 540, expected new crop revenue at 560. Exactly 1 year ago, anhydrous at $625 a short ton, nutrient composite at 626 points, expected new crop revenue at $625 per acre.
Everything was evened up.
Everything was all evened up. And the danger here is that these numbers want to head for that even money every single year, especially when that demand picks up seasonally. Yeah. Not so much in the fall, but especially in the spring. So the moral of the story here is cheaper fertilizer doesn't mean increased profitability necessarily.
Right.
At some point,
right,
we have to look at the dollars and cents on a, you know, on just a one-to-one basis and figure, well, shoot, if I could make you know, $6.50 on an acre of corn, boy, I'd be in good shape. But that's not the case right now. So just be careful out there. Sharpen your pencil, you know, type of stuff.
And it expected new crop revenue of $560. Nobody's looking to make a deposit in the fertility bank this year.
Absolutely not.
Doubling up unless somebody makes a mistake.
That's exactly right. Yep. Just real quickly, don't even worry about it. Fertilizer prices barely moved, and that includes state-to-state price action. Anhydrous is up a nickel. Potash down 56 cents. Farm diesel down another 5 cents on the week to a regional average of $1.87. That looks like it might be leveling off here for us and looking for a bottom. Again, don't run out of diesel, but don't get too aggressive just yet. Get to ProFarmer.com. Read what I had to write this week, and you'll find some information there. You can also check your local prices on the handy map. And I think I've said my piece. Chip?
Good. Very good. Very good. Guys, the recommendation that I'm going to make to y'all as we go into the end of the week, find a little time to do something that you really enjoy. If it's time in the tractor cab, get in the cab and spend some time. If it's family time, carve some time out and spend it with the family.
You got
to do these things that are making you happy in these times. You got to find time for it. Hey, for Davis and for producer Joe Stackler, thank you for listening. Monday morning, Jim Mulhern from the National Milk Producer Federation, and Monday afternoon, Ed Valley, Empire Weather. Have a good weekend.